This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello, listeners. You're listening to Yilliman on 3CR, 855am in your dial, 3cr.org.au, streamed online and via the playback service. And you can also listen in on demand via Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you might get your podcasts from. So today I'm going to be having a little bit of a talk about deep sea mining. Now, deep sea mining is not a new era of innovation. It's just the next frontier of colonial extraction. Now, after centuries of pillaging the lands here and elsewhere around the globe, the eyes of imperial powers and profit-hungry corporations have now turned towards the ocean floor. The same logic that stole land, that enslaved people, and that dug massive scars in the earth is now being used to justify tearing apart the seabed. The ocean is not a blank slate for development. It holds culture, it holds law, and it holds life that stretches back further than the earliest colonial mapmakers ever imagined. Here, on this continent, sea country has always been a living extension of land-based country. For coastal and for islander mobs, the ocean's not separate from our identity. It's our kin, it's our ancestor, and it's our home. The fact that First Nations peoples right across the Pacific, including here, have not been asked for consent or involved in decision-making around seafloor mining shows exactly what this is. It's just a continuation of the same colonial disrespect and the same erasure that has been happening for over 250 years. It's not new or innovative, it's just deeper and more desperate. The mining industry frames this as futuristic, but in reality it's a violent regression, a return to the worst impulses of colonial capitalism. It's not about building a sustainable future. It's about prolonging a dying economic system that relies on dispossession, on destruction, and on deregulation. Deep sea mining is not some techno-utopian fix like it's been heralded as. It is the theft of life from places most of us will never see, and it's being carried out by those who believe the ocean belongs to them. But it doesn't, and it never did. I'm going to go to another song and I'll be right back to talk about the destruction of the unseen ecosystems down there on the seabed floor.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Today I'm talking a little bit about deep sea mining. Now, the deep ocean is one of the most mysterious and it's one of the least explored environments that we have here on Earth. In many ways, we know more about the surface of Mars than we do about the abyssal plains and the hydrothermal vents of our own planet. These places host ancient, delicate ecosystems that have existed undisturbed for millions of years. Some of these species found here are unique to a single underwater mountain or valley or, you know, little area on the seafloor. And once these areas are destroyed, they are lost forever. Deep sea mining doesn't just damage these environments, it absolutely obliterates them. The machines that are used in deep sea mining operate like massive underwater bulldozers. They gouge, they grind, and they strip the seabed, turning complex habitats into dead, flattened zones. Now, these aren't marginal ecosystems. They play a critical role in maintaining the health of the entire ocean, including carbon storage and nutrient cycling. Sediment plumes that are kicked up by the mining operations, can travel for hundreds of kilometers. They suffocate life beyond just the immediate site. And because of the immense pressures, the darkness and the cold down there, any recovery for these ecosystems can take thousands of years, if it even happens at all. Now, this destruction happens out of sight for the most part, And that's exactly why companies are rushing in to exploit it. If this level of devastation happened on our land, like before our eyes, we bulldozed ancient forests for speculative minerals, it would be on the news, we would have people out there protesting, it would be all over your social media feeds. But because it's happening kilometres beneath the surface, down there in the dark, corporate interests think they can get away with it quietly. It's ecocide hidden by depth. We cannot let distance and darkness hide these companies from scrutiny, though. The life down there matters just as much as the life up here. So we really need to be doing something about this. That was Narakul Jainama by Emily Warramura, which in her lingo means I'm hurting. It's a song about the destruction of our mother country. And it's a really fitting song for what we're talking about today, which is the destruction of our ocean seabeds. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about in regards to deep sea mining is how it's very much being portrayed as a climate solution. But it is not. It's anything but. Now, you know, they're out here, they're saying stuff like deep sea mining is needed to help the climate, that it's essential for things like electric cars, for solar panels, and, you know, for the so-called green transition. But that's all a lie. What they really mean is that they want to keep the same systems going, just with a different fuel source. There are already much better options out there that exist. You know, we can recycle existing batteries, we can mine e-waste, we can redesign tech to use fewer rare metals. But that doesn't make rich people richer at the end of the day, which is why they're not doing it. It doesn't feed the shareholders, so they ignore these solutions. Deep sea mining isn't about saving the planet. It's about saving capitalism. It's about swapping one form of destruction for another. It's about ripping up the seabed instead of cutting down the rainforest. This is not a climate solution. It's a climate crime dressed up in green language. Now, this is something that we really need to be mindful of. And not just with deep sea mining, but with quite a lot of these, you know, so-called green solutions that are being put forward. They're not actually green solutions. All they do is stop one type of destruction and replace it for another. They stop impacting the climate in one area and just go and impact it somewhere else. But at the end of the day, they're still impacting the climate, they're still impacting the environment, they're still trashing the earth. Nothing's really any different. Nothing's changing with these so-called green solutions. And in fact, if you actually delve into it and you look into it a bit more, quite a lot of these, you know, these so-called electric cars and whatever else and stuff like that, they actually end up causing more destruction than your classic fossil fuels do. They're actually worse in many ways. And quite often the amount of time that we need to be, you know, operating these electric cars or, you know, wind turbines or whatever else, quite a lot of the time they have to operate for several years before they even break even with their own carbon that their construction has created. You know, they have to operate for a long time before they're even having any sort of positive effect or equaling out the negative effect of, you know, ripping up all these rare earth minerals and, you know, using all of these other sources of fuels and whatever else and stuff. It's not any better. In fact, quite often, we see that it's a lot more worse in terms of stuff like imperialism and genocide as well. Now, I'm talking about the Congo here in particular, as well as many other places around the world. But, you know, we only need to look at places like the Congo, where you've got the extraction of all these rare earth minerals for stuff like computers and smartphones, as well as for, you know, these green alternatives like electric cars and solar panels and whatever else. They've got all this extraction of rare earth minerals there, but it's being undertaken at a cost to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of lives. You know, they've got literal child slaves there that are being put to work by warlords who are themselves you know, contracted by big corporations. And, you know, a lot of these big corporations trying to masquerade as progressive and masquerade as being, you know, good for the climate and environmentally friendly and whatever else. But they're out here, you know, using child slaves. They're out here displacing people, dispossessing people of their land. They're out here shooting and killing people to get out these rare earth minerals. You know, that's not any kind of solution. We need to be thinking a lot bigger and a lot better than we are. Because at the end of the day, and you know, I've talked about this before on a radio show, at the end of the day, the solution isn't necessarily in the minerals we use or the fuel that we use. It's in the way that we live. It's in our day-to-day lives. It's in the way that we structure our society. You know, we need to get rid of our dependence on energy, because we have such a massive dependence on energy, especially in places like Australia and the rest of the West. You know, we've got ridiculous things that don't even need energy. Like, people have lounges where they can, you know, cool their drinks, or they can plug their phone into it, or it's got an electric motor to recline instead of just one of the old school cogs and handles and whatever else. We don't need that sort of crap. And think about how much power that's using, how much fossil fuels, you know, over the lifespan of that furniture, how much fossil fuels that's burning, or, you know, how many rare earth minerals it needs, or, you know, the amount of destruction it is causing unnecessarily because some people want to charge their phone from their lounge, or, you know, have an electric motor because they're too lazy to recline it themselves. I mean, do you even need a recliner? At the end of the day, a chair is a chair. Some of these people live in absolute luxury and privilege and don't even realize it because it's just their day-to-day lives. But yeah, we really need to be thinking about how we use energy, not necessarily what we're using for energy. That is the real actual answer to stuff like climate change.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Today on the show, we're talking a bit about deep sea mining. In particular, we're talking about how it is not the answer to the climate crisis and how it is not some environmentally friendly project. It is actually heavily destructive. Now, there's also the next subject I want to talk about in regards to this is the irreversible biodiversity loss. Now, we know that the deep sea is home to life that we're only just beginning to understand. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff down there. There's glow-in-the-dark octopuses, there's worms that eat your bones, there's microbes that have been found to survive off the heat of the earth, not off the need for the sun, as the rest of us up here on the surface need. You know, these aren't sci-fi creatures, they're real. They've evolved over millions of years down there, and they're about to be wiped out for profit. Now, when mining machines tear up the seabed, they destroy everything in their path. Corals, sponges, ancient microbial mats, all of these things are gone. These species can't run, they can't hide, most have never even been studied or classified properly yet, and some are only found in a single location down there. Once they're gone, that's it. There's no coming back for them. And it's not just the big, flashy species. The deep sea is part of the Earth's life support system. It regulates the temperature up here on the surface. It stores so much carbon. It recycles our nutrients. Now, killing off deep sea life will only collapse entire chains of balance. Chains we don't even fully understand. The plumes from mining choke everything in the water. They spread fine particles over huge distances. They smother filter feeders. They block out the light. They carry toxic metals through the ocean. No animal can escape it, and no ecosystem down there is left untouched by it. This is irreversible loss. It's not damage we can fix with money. It's not something that will grow back in 10 years. In fact, they done a study recently of an area that had, they simulated deep sea mining in an area. I think it was about 30 years ago. And they've gone back there, and over the last 30 years of being untouched, this area where they simulated deep sea mining has practically no life. Like, the ecosystem there hasn't bounced back. It hasn't been able to grow back. It's pretty much gone and devoid altogether now. Now, this is, you know, permanent extinction that we're talking about here. And for what reason? Just so that a couple of Western countries can keep hoarding devices, you know, can keep having access to our latest luxuries and can keep over-consuming in our energy and in our resources. And so that these mining giants can profit billions of dollars. Maybe even more, maybe even trillions. You know, it's not just about silence. It's about ethics. It's about knowing that something is fragile and they're choosing to destroy it anyways. That's the definition of brutality right there. And that's what deep sea mining is. It's going to destroy our oceans. And I can't stress enough how much that is going to have a flow-on effect for the rest of us. You know, when I say us, I mean the rest of life outside of those oceans. The oceans play such a core, crucial role in regulating our rain, in regulating our temperature, in, you know, the wind and so many other aspects of the environment and the climate and the ecosystem. It's such an integral part of life itself. You know, that's why life began in the ocean. And ever since, it's been an integral part of all life, even if it's life outside of the ocean. And this is what we're looking at destroying. You know, this is what is coming to a head here. Now, you know, I don't know the connection between deep sea mining and, you know, all this offshore fracking and whatever else and stuff, and the recent algal blooms that have happened over in South Australia. You know, there might be no connection at all, but we do know that these recent algal blooms over in South Australia are ultimately as a result of humans trashing the environment, trashing the climate, and trashing the oceans. Now, you've got this massive algal bloom over there that might take years to clear out. Not weeks, not months, but years. Because, you know, every time it gets hot again, it just flares back up again. You've got this massive algal bloom over there that is choking the waters, that's killed off hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of fish and, you know, whatever else out in the ocean. There's all sorts of stuff washing up on the shores over in Adelaide there. And it's all a result of humans messing with the balance and trashing the place. And this is the future that we're going to see more and more around the rest of the world. You know, it won't be long before we have a whole bunch of dead fish and sharks and stingrays and skates and whatever else washing up on the shores around the bay here in Melbourne. It won't be long at all before we have massive fish kill-offs here washing up on the shores. And not just here, it's going to happen right around the country. It's going to happen right around the world. In fact, you know, I was reading quite a damning study the other day that was more or less talking about how our oceans are going to get to a point with the way that we're going where there will only be a handful of species that still exist in the ocean, and they're going to be different kinds of algae, and they're going to be jellyfish, and that's it. Our ocean is just going to be full of jellyfish and algae. The acidity levels are going to rise as well. They already are rising, and it's going to kill everything off, and that's all that we'll be left with. You know, the ocean won't even be somewhere to go swimming in a couple of decades from now. You won't want to jump in it because it's going to be covered with algae and filled with jellyfish, and it's going to be acidic. You know, that is the reality that we're heading for. And, you know, this deep sea mining just plays into that. It's a part of that reality. It's, you know, another way to accelerate even faster towards that reality that we're all inevitably heading for. It's absolutely disgusting. You know, I don't know what needs to be done about it. I don't think that there is much that can be done about it, at least not under capitalism, and at least not while we've got the same Western colonial powers in charge of everything. You know, ultimately, what really needs to happen is we need some sort of revolution, and we needed it a decade ago. But, you know, where we are now, yeah, things just look horrible for the future. And if you're anyone who, you know, has any sort of understanding or learning or involvement with the environment and with the climate, you've no doubt seen the reality that we're heading towards. You understand it a bit more. But for those who don't know, you know, it's really scary and it's really frustrating and it's really upsetting. And I think the most, you know, one of the most upsetting things about it is the fact that the vast majority of people don't actually know. They don't actually understand. They're not actually clued in. And, you know, they don't actually see the destruction that's happening already. Because there's so much destruction already happening. And, you know, I probably speak for quite a lot of black fellows and other people involved with, or, you know, other people who have a lot of knowledge of the environment and stuff like that when I say this. But, you know, everything's already, it's already so visible and it's already so present. And, you know, you go out in the bush for a walk or you go down the park or you go anywhere really, and all you can see literally everywhere you look is destruction. You know, things out of place, plants where they're not meant to be. You got invasive species everywhere choking everything up. You got poisoned waterways everywhere, poisoned air everywhere. You've got crucial species dying off, whether they be plants or animals. You've got whole entire ecosystems crumbling and collapsing. You know, we've got massive, massive segments of bush, for example, where it's essentially just, you know, a handful of species there now. There's no biodiversity. It's just a handful of species, most of them invasive and introduced. And for the average person, you know, the average person might go for a walk through the park or a walk through the bush or whatever, and they might look around and, you know, they might see lots of greenery everywhere. But just because something's green doesn't mean it's meant to be there. Just because it's green doesn't mean it's, you know, a part of the healthy ecosystem. And this is the reality that we're already living in. And this deep sea mining is just going to make things even worse, especially when it starts having these flow-on effects where it starts, you know, messing with the environment and the climate up on the land, because the sea is so tied into our climate and it's so tied into our ecosystems here. It's all one big web of life, and they're going to take a big massive chunk out of that web, and the rest of the web's going to fall apart as a result. And that includes us too. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about deep sea mining today. We're also talking about the climate in general and the environment in general and how everything's going down the toilet. Now, I've been, you know, doing a little bit of research on this lately and reading a fair bit. And I think one of the most scariest things that I've come across as well is that we've now got a bunch of climate scientists and environmental scientists who aren't necessarily political at all and, you know, who probably sit, you know, somewhere in the center of the political spectrum. We've got a bunch of these climate scientists, environmentalists and whatever else now coming out and more or less saying that it's too late. You know, we missed our opportunity to act. We missed the chance to stop climate change. And now things are too late. Now we're, you know, it doesn't matter what we do now. They're more or less saying that, you know, we could turn around now today and we could change our entire society today in terms of our fuel consumption and what we're using and our carbon emissions and all this other stuff. And even if we changed all of that today so that tomorrow it was a completely different society, it'll still be too late. We're now past the threshold and things are just going to perpetually get worse and worse. And, you know, not just because we're adding to it, not just because we're still continuing to make things worse, but they're going to get worse and worse of their own accord now because we've hit this point where things just start to spiral inwards on themselves. And, you know, this isn't even the political scientists that are saying this. These are the apolitical scientists. These are the scientists that you'll never hear talk about revolution. And they're turning around saying, well, we should have had a revolution a decade ago. It's too late now. And all we can do now is bunker down for the future. You know, that's the reality that we're heading towards. We're heading towards a reality where we've got these billionaires. And I've seen, I haven't seen the actual bunkers, of course, but I've seen like a lot of the ads for this stuff. And I've seen a lot of the, you know, a lot of the discourse around this stuff. But these billionaires, they've all got these big underground bunkers. That's the future we're heading towards. where the rich are going to escape to underground bunkers, and the rest of us who can't afford that luxury are going to essentially perish in the coming climate crisis and the coming, you know, environmental collapse. And you should see these bunkers. They're absolutely ridiculous. I've been looking at, you know, a lot of the companies that advertise for them and that build them and stuff like that. And these things look like five-star spa retreats and resorts, albeit one that's in a cave. But, you know, the way that they've built them, you know, this is a luxury living. And this is where they're all going to go, by the way. You know, there's thousands and thousands of these bunkers that have been built already in places like Australia and right across the US. I think they got some in New Zealand as well. But this is where all the billionaires are going to go and going to live out their days when, pardon me, when the environment and the climate come to a point where the surface world is no longer hospitable, no longer habitable. And this is the reality that we're heading towards. You know, this is what is going to happen. These rich people, these billionaires, you know, all of these CEOs and executives and whatever else and stuff, they don't care about the climate. They don't care about the future of the surface world because they've got their own future already decided for them. They're going to go live in these luxury resorts underground where they've got, you know, these big hydroponic setups to grow their own food, and they've got everything else that they need down there. They've got, you know, air filtration and water filtration systems and whatever else. They can live down there for the rest of their lives and their children's lives and their children's children's lives. Meanwhile, what are we going to do up here on the surface? You know, we're going to sit back and do nothing. You know, that's the reality, I suppose. Because it's already too late. If people actually wanted to act on this, they should have done that a decade ago. You know, a decade ago, we should have been overthrowing this government and Western governments around the world. A decade ago, we should have been putting an end to mining, especially mining of fossil fuels and non-renewable resources. But we didn't, so now we have to live with the reality that we're heading towards. Now, you know, back to deep sea mining. This deep sea mining is being pushed by the same forces that are behind these crises I'm talking about. You know, the forces of corporate greed, of colonial entitlement, of capitalist decay. Companies like the Metals Company are leading the charge, and their goal is to get rich fast, no matter what the cost is. It's always been their goal. It's always been their prerogative. These corporations, they don't care about the climate. They don't care about oceans. They don't care about indigenous rights. They don't care about biodiversity or future generations. They care only about profits. They've seen the writing on the wall. Fossil fuels are on the way out. So now they're shifting to the next boom, which is a greenwashed gold rush. They're trying to convince us that this is for the greater good, this deep sea mining, that this destruction is necessary. But look at who benefits at the end of the day. It's mining CEOs that benefit. It's investors. It's hedge funds. It's the same people who have always profited from land theft, have always profited from pollution, from poverty, and from destruction. And they're not operating in the open as they have in the past. You know, these deals are happening behind closed doors. They're happening in hotel boardrooms, on private jets, at closed meetings of the International Seabed Authority, while everyday people, while scientists, while coastal communities are completely shut off from the discussions and shut off from what's happening. And they're rushing ahead before the public can even catch on to what's happening with this, before global regulations can be put into place, before any resistance can build. You know, they do this because they know that once people actually understand what is really happening, they will reject it outright. This isn't about survival. It's not about the planet. It's about squeezing the last bit of wealth from a dying system. If we let them, they'll destroy the ocean to prop up a sinking empire. And that's not progress. That's just collapse. That is what is happening. Now, there's been no consent about this. There's been no social license. You know, there hasn't been any way that the general public can disagree with this or speak out about this. Because for the most part, the general public's been left in the dark. Now, most people don't even understand what deep sea mining really is, what they're looking for down there, or that it's even happening. You know, it's already starting to happen in places. They've already been doing it for years. They're just looking at ramping it up even more. And the average person is completely oblivious to it. And that's how they want you to be. That's what they want. They want you to be ignorant to what they're doing and all of the theft and destruction that they're doing down there on the ocean seafloor. Because as long as you're oblivious, they can just continue to get away with it all. But, you know, let's be realistic. People aren't oblivious to other climate catastrophe. You know, people aren't oblivious to fossil fuels and to fracking and to all these other issues that we see. But for the most part, most people don't care. And I think that's something that really needs to be addressed. We're nearly out of time on the program today, so I'm not going to be talking about it today. But there really exists an apathy and a disconnect in the mind of the average working class person. And the average working class person, you know, seems to be happy with business going on as usual. You know, I don't know whether that's because people are uneducated and ignorant to what's happening. I don't know whether that is because people feel like they're powerless and they can't do anything. You know, I don't know if it's because, you know, people simply don't care. But at the end of the day, you know, this is the reality that we live in. This is the future that we have to reconcile with. And we're at a point now where it's just about bracing ourselves. You know, it's pretty much, don't get me wrong, look, I think we should really try and do stuff like whatever we can to stop deep sea mining going ahead and stop it ramping up. But essentially, we're now at a point where, and, you know, even the climate scientists are saying this, we're now at a point where it's too late to do anything. It's too late to actually save our species and redeem ourselves. What we need to be doing now is bracing ourselves for what is coming. And what is coming is complete collapse and destruction. And, you know, I don't want to sound like some doomsday preacher here, but that's what we're heading for. You know, in the next few years, we're going to see the complete collapse of our food production systems. We're going to see the collapse of climate. We're going to see the collapse of ecosystems right across the world. And what then? What then when we can't grow our own food anymore? When, you know, the earth has been so polluted, the topsoil has been so eroded or salinated or whatever else that we can't grow our foods, or, you know, some other issue, you know, such as the way that we've genetically modified so much of our food and we've really cut down on the diversity of its genes. Now, as a result, they're so much more susceptible to certain diseases which would wipe out entire crops around the world. If, you know, these diseases get a chance, that's the reality that we now live in. You know, that's what we have to contend with. The fact that over the next few years, you know, you think food's already expensive, you think the cost of living is already a crisis, wait a couple more years. You know, you'll be paying $20 for a loaf of bread. You know, you think it's ridiculous now that you have to pay, you know, $10 or whatever for a carton of eggs. Wait till you're paying $50 for a carton of eggs. That's the future that we're heading towards. You know, wait until there's no more bread or milk or eggs on the shelves because they can't grow wheat, because, you know, they can't grow food for all their cattle, and because they can't, you know, get this stuff out through the distribution networks. You know, what then? That's the future we're heading towards. That's why we've now got all these people coming out more or less saying, like, Brace yourselves. That's what you've got to do. That's your next step now. It's not trying to stop climate collapse. We're already in it. Now it's about bracing ourselves and, you know, setting up our own ways of growing our own food, whether it be backyard veggie gardens or getting together with your neighbors and your community to have some sort of community veggie garden. You know, even then, you know, I don't know how much that's going to save us. When the climate's trashed and when the air quality's trashed. I don't know what to do. I really don't. Hey, you know, we're at a point now where it's pretty depressing. It's very depressing if you understand what we're heading towards. And you actually understand how much we're in collapse already. You know, it's something I've been seeing myself for at least the last decade now. You know, you go out in the bush and you can tell everything's different. It's not how it was when I grew up. It's probably, you know, a world away from what it was before colonization. But even compared to when I was growing up, things are so different now. There's hardly any insects left out in the bush. There's hardly any biodiversity out in the bush. You've got big, massive sections of forest that are all dominated by, you know, one or two species of trees or vines or, you know, some other plant. Most of the time, plants that aren't even meant to be there as well. Invasive introduced species. And, you know, when the native plants, when they are there, they're not healthy. They're completely out of their own cycles as well. You know, they're going into fruit at completely different times of the year that they have for the last 120,000 years since blackfellas have been occupying the land here. You know, we've got so much knowledge about when plants, for example, should go into fruit. You know, when it's time to harvest certain plants, when it's time to harvest certain veggies, and, you know, when it's time to go hunt certain species and whatever else. And all of these systems are out of whack. They're wrong now. They're months out, not even just days or weeks out, but they are months out. You know, we've got plants that usually fruit during the summer, now fruiting year-round. But because they're fruiting year-round, the pollinators aren't there half the time. So, you know, they're not reproducing properly. They're not developing, you know, viable seeds for the future. They're also just growing weird, like the fruit in them, it just doesn't taste right. You know, the texture's all different, the taste is all different. It's not how it should be. And this is happening right throughout the bush. Everywhere I look, you know, things are out of whack. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. We're already well into climate collapse. You know, climate collapse isn't something of the future. It's something that we're living through now. Yeah. I'm going to leave it there. I'll play one more song. I'll try and find a good song to play to lift the moods up a bit after all this depressive talking. Stay tuned. You're listening to 3CR, 855M on your dial, 3cr.org.au, streamed online via the playback service. Coming up next is DJ Curly with Cultural Kinetics. I'll be back next week. Until then, have a good one.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.